welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm your host, librarian Laura Zaro-Kopinski. My guest today is Brittany Morris, author of the new young adult novel, The Cost of Knowing. The book has received multiple starred reviews, including one from Booklist that called it emotional and gripping. The Cost of Knowing uses fantastical elements to convey how life-threateningly real the problems that Black boys face in America are. So real, in fact, that even having superpowers isn't always enough to overcome them. Brittany Morris is also the author of Slay, the founder and former president of the Boston University Creative Writing Club, and holds a degree in economics. Brittany Morris, thanks for coming on A Bookish Home.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Wonderful. Well, congratulations on the book and all the rave reviews. And it was funny as I was, you know, just going about, normal life today, I was reading an email and got the, you know, the long-awaited Modern Mrs. Darcy Ann Bogle Summer Reading Guide and saw, oh, The Cost of Knowing is in it this year. That was exciting. So it just seems like everywhere you turn, there's great buzz about the book. So how has the book tour? I don't know if most of that's been virtual or just what's it been like to kind of bring the book out into the world?
Oh, it's been incredible. Surreal, in fact. I got to do an event with Roseanne Brown. She's the author of A Song of Raids and Ruin. And I got to do an event with Angie Thomas, who, you know, lifelong fan of hers. I've gotten to do multiple panels with the coolest people. I've just been having a ton of fun doing all these virtual events.
Great.
I think the highlight of it all was when Angie Thomas complimented my rap writing skills, because I didn't even know I had those until I started writing The Cost of Knowing. So,
oh, well, you're in great company with her. That is exciting. And it's kind of nice. One of the nice things about of course, it's wonderful to be in person, and I will look forward to in-person book events again, but it is really nice for virtual events to get to just see so many different authors, even if they live, somewhere completely different from you, and to see panels of authors that maybe wouldn't have gotten to be together in person. So there's definitely upsides, which is nice. Well, it's such a powerful story. I know I couldn't put it down, and I think listeners will have the same experience. Can you tell us a bit about the story and Alex, the main character?
Absolutely. So The Cost of Knowing is about two brothers. They're Black. One can see into the future, the older one, and the younger one can see into the past. And everything changes when the older brother, Alex, sees a vision of his younger brother dying in the next few days. And so it becomes a race against time to get to the bottom of this 400-year-old family curse and figure out what it means to be a joyful Black boy in the present.
It felt like such a original story with, I just thought it was so interesting how one could see the future and one could see the past and just the way everything is woven together with the family's backstory. How did the idea for the book come to you? And did you kind of know... did you have in your head how it was all going to go, or did it really come like in little bits of inspiration as you were going along?
That's a great question. So it kind of came from two different places. The first one was coming off the heels of Slay, I had to think about what I wanted for a sophomore novel. And something that I really, really loved about Slay is that it celebrates Black people from all over the globe and all of our vastly different experiences as Black people. And it celebrates people from all backgrounds and walks of life and people of all genders, especially Black women. And it, in a way that it didn't celebrate Black men as much. And so I wanted to write a book that was celebrating Black men in particular, and specifically the joy of Black men. Because when you see it, it's an absolutely beautiful thing. So that I said, at first I set out to write a story about this, teenage boy who he was happy-go-lucky and like he worked in an ice cream shop and he had tons of friends and they would, dance in the streets like nobody was watching and they didn't have a care in the world. And as I was outlining this story, I started asking myself why I felt uncomfortable writing it. And it wasn't that it was unrealistic, but I felt like I was doing a disservice to Black men writing about such joy without first acknowledging what a tall order it is to ask Black men to exist joyfully, given all that they are surrounded by. And so that was the first place that it came from. And then at the same time, I had this character that I couldn't get out of my head, who, of all things, worked in a toothpaste factory. I don't know why that was where it started, but the idea was that he could see the future of each tube of toothpaste, and then I got the idea to add another character in the factory who could see into the past, and that might add some conflict. And then it clicked one day that as black people, as a black person, I feel like I'm sandwiched between constantly looking at the future in the form of, police brutality and the school to prison pipeline and just all of these things that the media tells us is happening with an implied you could be next. And then at the same time, constantly looking back at, the civil rights movement and slavery and all of these things that are super important for us to remember, but that are emotionally taxing. And also with that, examining all of the discussions that we've had recently about being present and being mindful and grounding oneself and meditating, and just I wanted to write a story about how much more difficult that is to do when you are black and specifically a black man.
It's so interesting to me how you're able to weave all of that in through these sort of fantasy elements. And, I was reading someone's commentary earlier just about how the seeing into the future and kind of having this dread and anxiety of what Alex thinks is going to happen to Isaiah, although I'm sure he is sort of, hoping that he's wrong or that he can prevent this, that anxiety, the reviewer was just saying, like, how much they resonated with that in terms of just the anxiety they feel for the young black men in their lives. As you were kind of writing, were you thinking about genre at all, or just sort of writing it as it came to you? Or because I was kind of like interested in, and as I after I was kind of reading it and looking at sort of the difference between speculative fiction versus fantasy and kind of the nuances between that. I don't know if this is like too nerdy, but were you thinking about like the genre and like any like rules that you had to kind of follow to keep it one way or the other?
Not really at all. I think like with Slay, I just had this story that was on my mind, and it was, causing me physical pain until I got it out. And so it was just kind of a matter of being like, this is the story. I don't know where you want to put it, but this is what I got.
Yes, I love that. Yeah, and it's I hadn't really thought before about how, that grounding in our present world really keeps it from being fantasy. It becomes more that speculative fiction. I just think that it's interesting. I hadn't really thought about that before. Well, was there an aspect of the book or even just like a particular character that was the most challenging for you to write?
A character that was, I think writing Alex's boss was pretty difficult because in the book, Alex works in an ice cream shop, and his boss is in quite a difficult situation because he cares deeply for Alex. He was actually best friends with Alex's mother before she and her husband were killed 4 years prior to the story. And so he cares deeply for Alex, but at the same time, his business is going under because he's not the greatest manager. And so he finds himself in a position where he thinks he has to kind of twist Alex's arm a little bit to get him to stay longer and close one night and then open the next day, which is, I believe, illegal before a certain age. And at the very least, not the kindest thing. So he becomes pretty manipulative, and Alex has to start drawing some boundaries. And it was a really interesting experience because I think his name is Scoop. Scoop might have been my first adult character in a YA book that I've written that is actively manipulating the main character, and the main character has to stand up to them.
Interesting.
Yeah, and that was very much not a part of my childhood. I grew up in a pretty violent home where any kind of talking back was seen as, an offense that should be met with violence. And so writing Scoop's character felt cathartic in a way, and it was also a little bit, having to remember different parts of my childhood. So that was a wild experience.
Yeah, and yeah, just having to kind of see Alex navigate all of that, and just having to face issues that I feel like adults have trouble setting boundaries with, or
Yeah.
like standing up for themselves. And yeah, just another instance of having to really be an adult very, very early. Well, I was kind of wondering, and I know it's probably been different being probably more on a virtual book tour, but have you been able to speak with many teens about their experiences reading the book?
Not directly so much as I did with Slay. There have been a couple events where I've been lucky enough to have teens introducing me and asking questions, and they've been really engaged when they've been there. But oftentimes the teens are among the audience and they're putting in their Q&A questions, so I see their text, but I don't get to talk to them face to face, unfortunately. I miss that so much. I miss signings in particular, because then you get to talk to everybody individually.
Yeah, and I would imagine, if a teen really felt like the book did speak to them, they probably would be much less apt to say that virtually than just like chatting with you in a signing line. And yeah, that is kind of interesting. Hopefully things will go, be able to have those experiences sometime in the near
Yeah.
future. Well, I always love to hear about authors' writing journeys. Did you always want to be a writer? How did that kind of come to be?
I decided I wanted to be a writer when I was 9 years old. My fourth grade teacher gave us a journal assignment where we had to write a page each day, and of like what was going on in our life. And because I was abused at home and heavily bullied at school, I looked at the blank page and went, "There's no way I'm going to relive everything that's going on in my life," and then drag the teacher into this whole mess. So I said to myself, "I'm just going to make things up. I'm just going to put in random characters and name them random things and come up with another story. And I just hope that it passes the assignment." So I think I turned in 7 pages that first day. I was writing
Wow.
furiously. And I thought for sure I was going to fail the assignment because it was way too long and it wasn't the right topic. And I was like, "Well, that was a wash." But then the teacher pulled me aside the next day. And when I thought I was in trouble, she said, "This is really, really good. You could actually do this like as a prof, like at, when you grow up, you could actually be a writer." And this was after she read my journal entry aloud to the class anonymously. And so
Wow.
when that happened, I got to look around at all of the kids that had been bullying me, and they were surprised that this story came out of one of their classmates. And so I just stayed anonymous and just watched. And it was just the most amazing thing. And I think like writing is the only thing that I've ever won first prize in ever. Like, I was pretty bad at most things as a kid, but boy, could I write. So that's just
Oh.
kind of how it happened.
Well, I love that there was that encouragement from a teacher, and how that one comment or someone taking the time to really pay attention to a student's talents or potential, that could really make an impact. That's really nice. I hope that
Yeah.
teacher has been keeping an eye out and realizes, hey, look what wound up happening to my student.
Actually, yeah, I sent her a copy of Slay and then a copy of The Cost of Knowing. So,
Oh, that's so nice. I love
yeah.
that. Well, were you a big reader as a kid too? Is that something, were you really into books growing up?
Weirdly enough, not so much. Because I grew up in a really sheltered home as well as, and so all of the media and everything that we took in mostly had to be religious or extremely juvenile. And so I really wasn't that into reading because it was just the Bible or Winnie the Pooh. So I
Oh,
was like,
wow.
"Well, I'm not really my thing." There were a few books that I got to read because I was in school and they encouraged us to read books, and I went to public school for a lot of my elementary experience, so there weren't a whole lot of religious books. So I did read a few big things like Ella Enchanted. That was a story that I really loved.
I loved Ella Enchanted so
Yes,
much.
it was so good. I remember to this
Oh.
day. And then Holes was another one that I got that I loved. So there were a few things. There were a few really positive reading experiences when I was a kid.
It's actually kind of funny with Ella Enchanted. I don't know if you were thinking about this at all. Just the whole idea of sort of a gift being a curse is sort of
Oh,
I didn't really think about that before. Like her, so in for listeners who haven't read it, in Ella Enchanted, the main character is given a gift by a fairy that she always has to be obedient, but then quickly realizes, and her like family realizes that that is actually a curse because anyone can make you do anything. So that's sort of interesting. I didn't. That's an Ella Enchanted connection. That's always fun.
Yeah.
Well, I also saw too that you had an involvement with the Redwall books with a video game. Could you tell us about that?
I did, yes. Somebody tweeted at some point and said you should throw your wishes out into the universe. And I said, okay, here's a wild one for you. I would love to write for video games one day. And so I just sent that tweet out, having no idea where it was going to go. And maybe a day or two later, a person from Soma Games reached out to me in my DMs and said, hey, we're making a game based off of the Redwall series. Are you familiar? Are you interested? It's a choose your own adventure game. You would be writing the whole thing. And I said, oh my goodness, sign me up. And so that was my first writing gig. So they said, send us 25,000 words, come up with the story. Here's the main character. Here's what he's after. And that's all we really have. So that was my first video game gig. And it was great because I got to learn how to make dialogue trees and Ardyssey, this new program, and just learn so many different things doing that.
That is so cool. And I love the idea of like a bookish video game. That sounds
Yeah.
very fun to me.
Same.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's sort of like under wraps or anything, but have you been working on your next book? And do you think that you'll, and actually along with that, do you think that you'll sort of continue in the same vein with young adult, or do you think about like different stories and different age groups?
That's a great question. So I would love to talk about what I'm working on next. My next book is called The Jump, and it comes out in 2023. It is about four Seattle teens who run an online cryptology forum. And one day, a super cryptic social vigilante group posts a puzzle on their cryptology forum with the promise of high-tech resources and political influence for the winner. And the teens plan to use those prizes to take down an oil refinery that's going up in their neighborhood. And my goal with this book is to make it the most action-packed book I've ever written. So far, we've got a grocery store heist, we've got a car chase, we've got a daring escape through a sewer. I'm packing everything into this book.
Oh, that sounds fun. We'll have to,
Yeah.
and you said 2023 to look out for
Yes.
that. Oh, great.
Yeah, and then I also wrote my first middle grade pitch just this week. So hopefully that'll go somewhere. Thank
Oh, that's great. I think yeah, middle grade would be fun to read from you too.
you.
Well, I always love to hear what authors have been reading themselves. And it can be, for any age or for adult. Are there any books you want to recommend to listeners?
I've been reading two books. One is called The Winterborn Home for Valor and Vengeance, which is fantastic so far. And then it's by Allie Carter. And then I've been also reading The Upper World by Femi Fadogba, I believe is his name. And that comes out later this year. So loving both of those.
Oh, great. And I'll definitely link to those. Well, I have some different sort of like, favorite questions, bookish sort of related questions. Do you have a favorite library?
I do. So the Seattle Library is up there. It's got to be a tie between the Seattle Public Library and the library at, oh, where was this? It's in Dublin. Oh my goodness,
Oh,
the name of this
at
place.
At Trinity at the
Yes.
at that college. Oh, okay, cool.
Yes. Could not think of the name of it.
Yeah, that's great. How about, do you have a favorite bookstore?
Yes, also in Seattle. It's called Elliott Bay Book Company. It's huge. There's a gigantic cafe. I think it's two stories. There's like a restaurant right outside. It's amazing. It's extremely bikeable, extremely walkable. Love it there.
Oh, I'm gonna have to take a. I've never been to Seattle, so I'm gonna have to add that to the list and get to that library and bookstore. Is there a book that you have as a comfort read that you like kind of go back to again and again?
It's probably gonna sound strange, but I don't really read books twice.
Oh, interesting. Not a
Yeah.
rereader.
No, not at all.
Too much to read, too little time. So,
That's true.
all right. Is there, do you have a favorite reading spot, somewhere you really like to read?
I just kind of curl up wherever. I'm sorry, I wish I had better answers for you. These are all
No,
like super unexciting.
it's fun to hear.
I guess wherever I have coffee is my favorite reading
Yes.
spot.
You need some coffee with your reading. Do you have a favorite like page to screen adaptation, like book to movie or show?
Ooh, that's a great question. I mean, The Hunger Games is up there, a classic.
Ooh, that is a good one.
That's the first one that comes to mind. I think I didn't get back into, or I didn't fall in love with reading until after Twilight, so otherwise that might have been up there as well.
I do remember I was very into Twilight at the time when it came out, and I was like in my 20s, and I should not have been as into it as I was. I
Oh.
remember going to see that in the theater, and just the entire theater of girls like losing their minds when I can't even think of his name now. The Robert Pattinson,
Edward?
is that his name?
Yeah.
Comes on screen for the first time. Just yeah, I think everyone loved that adaptation.
Oh.
Do you have a particular writing spot that you have as like part of your routine?
I have a meticulously designed, extremely ergonomic desk space upstairs, and most often I end up curling up wherever the baby is, nursing, typing with one hand all the way off on the side. Like, it's just I write everywhere
Oh,
else.
that is a. I didn't do it with the typing, but I do remember sitting trying to like hold a book with one hand, and that is
Yep.
a challenging stage. Well, and actually, I forgot to ask, and I'm sure it's probably different every day now. Do you have like a certain writing routine in terms of like a word count you're trying to hit, or like I've got to get this scene done today? Like, how do you kind of organize your writing life?
Yeah, so before when I had all the time in the world to myself, my goal was just to write the book as fast as possible because then I wouldn't give myself time to overthink things and, back out of things and change my mind and overwork the plot and all of that. And now, my goal is to write 1,000 words each weekday and then preserve my weekends for like unwinding, clearing my head, taking in stories rather than making them. And I'm on pace to hit my next deadline, so seems to be working so far.
Nice. Well, good for you, because that's a challenging phase. But maintaining 1,000 words a day, that's awesome. Do you have any favorite sources for book recommendations? Like, just certain people who recommend books to you, either like in real life or online?
If I'm looking for a book specifically for research, like a really specific book, I'll ask Twitter. And I started doing that ever since I was looking for books that I could use to research hot air balloon travel, of all things. And I read Around the World in 80 Days. And do you know, even though almost every version of that book's cover has a hot air balloon, there's not a single hot air balloon in that book.
Really?
Yes. So I essentially just wasted a whole bunch of, I mean, it was a great story, but I also just wasted a whole bunch of time I could have been researching. So now I ask first. And then if I'm looking for just a fun read, just for fun, for no reason, I'll just walk into a bookstore and just choose strictly based on the cover. I'm 100% a sucker for amazing covers, so.
I am too. I definitely am as well. Well, I know you mentioned Twitter. If listeners are looking to kind of follow along with you online, is there somewhere you tend to hang out the most online?
I'm usually on Twitter. If people want to contact me directly, the best way to do that is through the contact page on my website at authorbrittanymorris.com. And then if you want to follow me on social media, my handles for Twitter and Instagram are at Brittany M. Morris.
Wonderful. I guess just lastly, is there anything you hope in particular that readers take away from The Cost of Knowing and Yeah, just now that it's out in the world.
It's over, it's cliche at this point, but everyone truly is going through a struggle that you may not know anything about. And so just when people tell you that they're struggling, believe them. Not every struggle is visible.
Brittany Morris, thank you so much for coming on. I really enjoyed chatting with you, and I hope that listeners go pick up a copy of The Cost of Knowing or listen to the audiobook or go run and borrow it from your local library. It is just really such a powerful read, and I think it should be, I want to mention too, it should be on all of the teachers' and librarians' bookshelves. So I hope people pick it up this summer.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
For links to all of the books mentioned on this week's episode, you can visit abookishhome.com. And there you'll also find a link to our new online bookshop. A Bookish Home has teamed up with the new organization bookshop.org, which supports independent bookstores. And if you'd like, you can browse books by authors who have been guests on A Bookish Home. I'm also sharing there all of the books mentioned on the podcast, books I've been reading lately, and other recommendations. It's a really wonderful site to browse and look through books. And if you make a purchase, it supports A Bookish Home and independent bookstores. So it's a win-win. So if you want to check that out directly, it's bookshop.org/shop/abookishhome. And you'll also find that at abookishhome.com. If you are enjoying the show, I hope you take a minute to subscribe and also rate and review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoyed this episode, I would encourage you to share it on social media to help other people find the show and this episode. Thanks for listening, everyone, and happy reading.